Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey hustlers, we know that this 2024, the entrepreneurial journey is filled with challenges. An often overlooked aspect is the time-consuming task of processing payroll and managing government requirements. And did you know that the average admin spends a whopping 50 hours per month dealing with just government compliance? That's time you could be spending on growing your business, or let's be honest, taking a well-deserved break. But fear not, we got a game changer for you, introducing Sprout Solutions and their tailored solutions for MSMEs called the Payroll Starter. With Sprout Solutions Payroll Starter, you can finally reclaim your time and get your life back on track. Say goodbye to the stress of remembering tax dates or worrying about missed payroll runs. This bundle is designed to make your life easier and your business more efficient. And here's the best part. The cost starts just at 5,000 pesos per month for businesses with up to 10 employees. Yep, you heard that right. That's just 5,000 pesos per month. So why spend another minute drowning in payroll paperwork when Sprout can revolutionize the way you manage your payroll and government requirements? Take the first step towards a more efficient business today. Visit sprout.ph/payrollstartermonthly5k. If you missed that, don't worry. We have it in the description box of this episode, so click that too. And again, big shout out to Sprout Solutions because your time is too valuable to be spent on paperwork. Reclaim it with their Payroll Starter. Now let's begin this episode.
Podcast Network Asia.
The Hustle Share podcast is brought to you by Capita. Capita's software solution seeks to automate the equity management process for startups, including workflows around cap tables, ESOPs, due diligence, and transactions. Sign up at Capita.com to get started with your digital cap table, ESOP, award granting, and all things equity. Free for companies with under 25 stakeholders. Also powered by Limitless Connect. Limitless Connect can provide digital CX solutions. The teams of Limitless Connect have years of CX experience, which equip them as the driving contact centers in the future. Sign up for a free consultation with Limitless Connect at www.limitlesscx.com. With Limitless Connect by your side, anything is possible. Also powered by Pod Machine, the simplest way to grow and edit your podcast. Sign up now at podmachine.com and use the code HustleShare to get one free edit.
It acts like credit. It's money that you don't have. You just don't have to ever repay it. So in that case, a lot of us benefit from other people's capital being advanced to us. And so the lower your interest rate is, the closer it becomes to an investment.
Welcome to HustleShare, the podcast that features the daily grinds of unique hustlers around the world to show not our differences, but that our hustles are very much alike. Now here's your host, Ronster Baityong.
Welcome to this episode of Share Podcast. We are back with a vengeance again.
New Year's, but I've been wanting to get this man in this show. We're now around year four, and I'm glad we finally got you again. It's been a heck of a journey. But before I get carried away, let's welcome to the show Mr. David Bonifacio Abridge. All right. Thank you so much. And again, David, welcome to the show. Finally, we got you here.
Thanks. I mean, I've listened to I don't know how many episodes by now, but yeah, glad to be here. And I've really seen it evolve.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah.
From me cussing too much.
to now, me cussing more.
Yeah. Minimizing my cussing thing. I remember back in the early days of the show, I got messages from people like, hey, you cuss too much. There are kids listening to the show. First of all, why are there kids listening to my show? But again, I appreciate all the support. But again, it's now your turn and you are one of the inspirations that I've had. I don't know if you remember, but there's one key point in my life where you really helped me out. This is in between when Party File failed and I was just about to launch Chatbot, and I visited in your office in Eastwood or near Eastwood, Bagumbayan.
Technically. Yeah, it was very near there back there. Then. Yeah.
And you gave me the best advice, and again, helped me propel to launch Chatbot in the traditional way, which is through profit. And ever since then, that's when I think one of the biggest turning points in me trying to think like a businessman rather than a startup founder. Because startup founder, you're built to think the brand money, grow at all costs.
Blitz scale, yeah.
Blitz scale. But now, again, just super grateful. I just want to get that out of the way because you are amazing. But before I get carried away, I need to ask you the million-dollar question. David, what's your hustle?
Okay, I think to put it really simply, particularly in the Philippines, I started Bridge. Mm-hmm. And so under Bridge is our payroll company. We offer outsourced payroll and Access, which provides wage-backed financial services like loans.
Wow.
I think we're the lowest in terms of interest. Mm-hmm. We're very quiet. I wouldn't really call us like a venture startup. I mm-hmm. guess we shifted to something that's more conservative, quiet.
Right.
More aligned with my personality also, I think. Yeah. And then on the other side, I'm also the country partner for DNB Aura.
Yes.
Which is a Singapore-based regional fund. Mm-hmm. We're mostly focused on Series A investment. In the Philippines, though, we've started rolling out our Scout Fund.
Yes,
Start really help build the ecosystem. Yeah, a few interesting things there. Like, I think last year was our first year beyond the pandemic where the team was finally able to come. Nice. MC. I think everyone's excited about the Philippines.
Yep. Shout out, Sam.
Yeah.
There you go.
You met Sam, that's right. Mm-hmm. And then during the pandemic, Banjo Castillo, good friend of mine, you know, very, very accomplished professional executive, you know, across these big brands, right? So we decided we wanted to put up something that could help a lot of the companies that were affected. Mm-hmm. So we put up it's an investment vehicle called Archangel.
Wow.
So the idea there was to start investing in emergent businesses, which are not necessarily businesses that, I would say, you know, an emerging business is something that has shown critical mass in either means of supply or the demand.
Okay.
It's like it's hit critical mass. Emergent for us was more areas that had reached critical points. Learning, you know, like education in a post-pandemic world, what's that look like?
Wow.
Liquidity. A lot of people were, you know, basically running out of cash.
Got it.
And livelihood.
Absolutely. And during the pandemic, that's a boon, right? I mean, there's so many businesses that almost went belly up. Some of them went belly up.
Yeah.
But that was going to be amazing. But before I get carried away, because there's a lot to unpack here, but before we unpack each and every one of them, I need to ask you to buckle up, my man. Because we're going to have to ride the Hustle Share time machine. Alrighty, there you go. Going all the way back. So we are now all the way back from your origin story. So David, again, I've learned so much about you. And again, just to simply unpack from what I remember from that point that you told me that when you started your journey, and I'm not sure if that was the real start, you had a handicap because you had to technically get a sinking boat from sinking. But before we even get to that, can you talk about how was life growing up? Because again, from what I remember, you've been, again, the son of a pastor. Not you are still the son of a pastor.
Yeah,
what the hell am I talking about? No, it's not about that.
Like, I'm not a very good representative, but yeah.
Okay, but again, you grew up in a family where persuasion and faith come at a crossroads. Mm. And of course, entrepreneurship is part of that, right? And it's a really unique mix. But what was that like? And what was the mindset growing up in your household?
You know, I think for sure my parents had a big influence. Mm-hmm. You know, my dad was a businessman and then he essentially either sold or gave up most of the companies to become a pastor.
Wow.
Which I respect more now than I did back then.
Right. Absolutely. That's hard.
I remember my younger brother was like, "So you mean we're going to be poor?" So I mean, and because there is a real, you really do trade, you know, I think I respect it more now. And it's part of, I guess, one of the things is where my dad is very clear about his own life score and he pursued it, you know, regardless of the financial score.
Right.
I thought that was not regardless, but I mean, I would say like he didn't make a financial score his primary score.
Got it.
So I think that was a big influence in the sense that I always realized that you could pick your own score. Mm. It didn't have to be the score anyone else gave you, you know?
Right.
I think that was, But also because he was a businessman, I remember as a kid, like his bedtime stories. Right. And that's kind of extreme. Like he'd bring in like a whiteboard and bring like charts and things like that. And my mom would be like, what the heck are you doing? Get out of here. Go to sleep. You know, like that. So I think that was really what I like got me interested in business.
Nice.
I don't think I was, I think maybe up to high school, I did okay in school. Pretty good. I mean, college was not stellar at all. Mm. I tried to work early. Okay. You know,
did some work like, early, like work in while you're still in school? Or?
Yeah, while I was still in school, like I would try and get like these outsourced web design jobs and then outsource it to other people. I couldn't design a website or develop one. Back then, there was a lot of arbitrage.
Right.
That you could, I was really trying to get these jobs and work and save.
Yep.
I think that was a big part of it. So, you know, any free time I could, like I tried to get my subjects Tuesday, Thursdays. You know, it was tiring. Right? 7 to 9 p.m., 7 a.m. to 9 p.m.
Got it.
I think that developed my work ethic, but it gave me a lot of free time to do other things, on the MWF.
Right.
And then I think another formative time was in my last SEM break before I graduated. I went to Kabul, Afghanistan. So, you know, Paul Paho. I'm sure you know him, right?
Shout out, Paige, man.
So I was chatting with him and he was like, I said, hey, dude, I'm thinking of something to do. This is how long I've known this guy, right? Oh. He goes,
like, did he have hair still back then?
I've never seen him with hair.
All right, So that was his look.
He did have hair here.
Okay.
In the chin.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, let's be careful where he is. This is a podcast. After. So yeah, I go, it's my SEM break. And he just like kind of randomly goes, why don't you come to Afghanistan? He was based in Kabul then.
Paul
used to be a missionary to Kabul. Yeah.
This is pre the war.
This is like 2000. I went in 2004. This is the first elections after the war.
After the Taliban was kicked out.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
So I was like, hey, that sounds like a cool idea. So I sent my passport to him.
What?
You know, he sends it back with a visa. Yeah. We worked it out between us. And then, you know, somehow, it's probably not the best venue. But somehow I figured out how to pay for it. You know,
right.
I didn't have any money as a student, right?
Yeah.
Through my parents' stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. Use their points and things like that.
Wow.
And then told them. And then my parents were like, what? You're nuts. But, you know, they were ended up supporting it anyway.
It's amazing.
Yeah, because they were very supportive you know, about the... Obviously, it terrified my mom in particular, right? I was only there for a week. But I think it was very, very formative in the sense that you really see... You know, you really get out of yourself, out of your world, and you see a different space. You experience different things. The funny thing is, when I get there, Paul wasn't there.
What?
He was in Dubai partying.
That's so Paul, right? Come meet me in Poblacion. But I'm not there anymore. Just enjoy yourself. What happened in that 1 week? And how was it so formative that, you know, it's left an indelible mark in your life till now?
You find that we're really all more similar than we are different.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that's very clear. I think it also makes you a bit more fearless. You know, because there was one time where I was shopping in a place called Chicken Street.
Chicken Street.
Yeah. And then, you know, the guy I was with got the time wrong. So we left early for a meeting. We thought the meeting was like, I think like 12:30 or something. And we get there, there's no one there, right?
What?
The meeting spot. And it's true. The meeting was at 4 p.m. or something like that, right? So I was like, we turn on the TV. The place where we were was hit by a suicide bomber.
Oh my God.
Right? And then so it's like, and then you realize, oh, wow, you know, you really don't have a lot of control.
Right.
You really have to make the most of the actual moments you have.
Wow.
So things like that, right? That was really, or this place I wanted to play tennis in, like, got hit by an RPG. It was really funny. funny in a weird way. It's like, I was like, okay, I can't play tennis, you know. But I think all of that to say you really see the world in a different light.
Right.
You don't see yourself as exceptional. You really see yourself as like, another piece of a bigger picture, but very fragile piece at that, right?
Correct.
And then, but if you make the most of it and you're happy to be open to the new experiences, you enjoy it a lot for what it is. It was Ramadan during that period. I'm so fasting with them, eating with them after. I thought that was a really nice experience.
Right.
I thought like, you know, I just had a really good time. I wanted to go back for a year after.
Okay.
But instead I helped the church set up a foundation, like a scholarship foundation. Did that for a while. That was also really, really good to see how, you know, just how difficult it is for most people to catch up, right? Or to get any advantage.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so I think a lot of those experiences really dealing with people who are either in really bad situations, not because they're bad people or anything, but because of the circumstances they're in, really opened my eyes to, you know, you kind of grow up where it's like, if you work hard, mm-hmm. you become successful, you have a good life. If you don't work hard, you know, you become poor. It's not right. necessarily true for everyone.
Yeah. A meritocracy, again, as much as I believe that it exists on some countries, it's a myth in a lot of countries, especially here from where we are in the Philippines, that, you know, the opportunities that you are given solely is a reflection of your network and where you originate from. And again, I'm an outlier because I should not be here. Knowing where I came from and how I speak this way and I look this way. But if I hadn't learned how to speak English this way, it's not even close. But in that light, right, given that you now understand the opportunities that are presented to you after Afghanistan, when you came back, since again, you have a different perspective now.
Yeah.
What was the first few things that you started doing, especially now that's coming out of college now, and you, what are the next adventures that you started to pursue?
You know, I think pre the foundations, because after the scholarship, I also joined the board of Habitat for Humanity.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was really also interesting, eye-opening. You know, met really amazing people who wanted to build housing. You right. know, like, it's a major issue. It's a major issue for the Philippines. Yep. Part of it is because we have such a large growth rate, birth rate. Right.
Yeah.
Hint, condoms. Right. Yeah. I think one of the things that we can think about is, I think the more I thought about it is, I think two things changed. The first one is, over time, my concept of value has changed. When I was younger, value for me was about how much money and what money can buy. Right. Mm. And then as I got older, value for me became how much life you could unleash.
Nice.
You know, like how much, I think that's what's really changed. So, and I think part of that is these experiences, but part of it also was taking over the family business, which was in a lot of debt at that time.
Right.
The story there is we had actually sold that company. So we didn't know we owned it, but then something like my dad had co-signed an old loan because he had very good credit. So it was a clean loan that the new company was supposed to pay out.
All right. But they guarantor, never did. Technically.
For over 10 years.
What?
So it had ballooned, right? Oh, so we took the company back. We cleaned it up. Yeah.
What? Okay, just for content, if you're comfortable talking about, what company is this and how bad was the financial?
I won't mention the company, but it was pretty bad. It was probably about, I mean, on hindsight, I was 23 years old then.
23.
Yeah, so, I mean, like a few million.
Oh my God.
Yeah, like I would say like 8 digits.
Holy shit.
Are you kidding
me?
Yeah.
What?
Not small, yeah. And that was just the Philippines, right? It wasn't Hong Kong. It wasn't like all the other stuff. So there was also stuff there. But having fixed it, I think that was good. That was an interesting experience.
Mm.
But I remember on one of the business trips, I was in Amsterdam. I talk about this experience a lot because we were meeting with one of our partners there. Okay. I was meeting with one of our partners there.
Right.
And so the funny part was when I, you know, a lot of people say that when I share this part, they all think I was high. I was definitely sober. But basically, I was in the Rijksmuseum and I was looking at the paintings. And, you know, when you look at the paintings, you're obviously moved. Mm. I'm a painter also. So I love these things. And so, like, you realize there's value in these paintings, but you can't price it.
Mm.
And as a businessman, you're wired to price.
Of course.
And you're looking for, you know, this is a good investment, what's the return? And now you're faced with something you recognize has value, but you can't really price. What's it worth? 100 million, 200 million, like a billion? And so, you know, some people say, right, like the value is the fair, whatever, if someone's willing to pay for it, someone's willing to sell, that's the value, right? I think. But then I went back to the hotel and I was like, thinking about that idea that there are values, there are things of value that aren't just market driven or aren't just price. And markets change, right? Like if it was a disaster, you'd trade your MacBook Pro for supply of water.
You know? Onions now.
Onions now, yeah.
Right.
And so when I was thinking about it, I came up with these criteria. The first one was materials used. So things of value, when I look at the things I valued, They tend to be made of certain materials, gold, diamond, yep. you know, like rare materials.
Yep.
The second one is craftsmanship. Mm. So when you look at things I value, they'd be like intricately crafted, mastercrafted, right. you know. Mm. Then I would look at function, like a MacBook Pro is more valuable than a MacBook.
Absolutely.
Rarity. So let's just say single edition or limited edition is more valuable than, you know, mass
yep.
produced.
Yep.
A maker, you know, I wear cheap clothes, but if you put a guy on a horse on my shirt, all of a sudden it's worth more, right?
Absolutely.
I guess as a badge of the quality of the maker, right?
Right.
And then lifespan, when things last longer, in that famous Patek commercial, which is you never really own one, you hold on to it for the next generation. Correct. So it has that longevity, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I started writing it down and I started throwing the stuff I valued, like stuff I owned and stuff I wanted, and I was working hard for against that criteria. Then I realized that the most valuable thing in my universe were people.
Absolutely.
Like materials used. Everything I was after was inert, no life.
Wow.
You know, and here I was like surrounded by, you know, Philippines has a lot of people.
Mm.
You know, I was willing to save on them to have more of the inert.
Right.
And I said, okay, wait, I need to change something, right? Craftsmanship, you know, science is always trying to copy, like breakthrough in science. We copied the human ear. You know,
right,
it's like,
right.
And then there's like millions of ears. Walking around, right? Like there's already these things that are just so intricately crafted. It actually sparked an interest in like how the brain works.
Wow.
You think about the most expensive computer and the human brain, the human mind, right? Mm. Very intricately crafted.
Like, yep. One of one, always.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that also speaks to the rarity, right?
Right.
Single edition, one of one. Function, you know that people are more, I mean, if you look at people as simply their economic function, then it's easy to say, okay, you're worth this much, you're not worth this much.
Yeah.
But for example, like I have a kid. He's not an economic gain. He's an economic drain.
There.
Right? Like he's, you have a kid, right? You have, how many kids?
No,
you don't have kids yet?
I'm married, but I don't have any dinks.
Well, I don't know if a wife is an economic gain or an economic drain.
Depends
if they wish
on their mood.
Yeah. Yeah.
Around Christmas and around probably a couple months.
Net drain. It's probably a net drain.
It evens it out. There you go.
But you think about it. They bring you joy.
Yes.
Right. They're not, you don't marry who you're going to marry. I mean, some people probably do, right?
Depends.
Yeah. But I mean, at least for me, right? Like, I think the joy my family brings me, you know, and I'm not necessarily a model family guy at all by any means, but, you know, like, you know, when I see my kid or I see my wife, the joy they bring me is just, it's more than any more money I would have made, you know, or have saved, right? If they were in my life. Maker, you know, if you're religious, you believe God made man, you know. If you're unreligious, you believe man made man, you know. And I think either way, it's really, really important.
Mm-hmm.
Lifespan. So, for example, if you believe God made man, you believe the soul's eternal.
Absolutely.
And, you know, like, I think that's a good way to make your money last forever.
Right.
You convert it to, I call it the asset class that heaven accepts.
There you go.
Now, if you believe that man made man, I think that's a very plausible thing to believe also. And I think the way I see it is, you live on through the lives of people you've touched.
Yep, absolutely.
And so if you live on through the lives of people you touch, the more people you touch in tangible ways, right? Mm-hmm. Not in just kind of like fluffy or, you know, like, but like, for example, because of your life, someone went to school, got a job, took his family out of poverty. And so these led to new scores for me.
Mm-hmm.
Impact scores like gross wage value, the amount of wages I get to generate over time, or the companies we do get, or cost of impact. How can we drive down the cost of impact for this field?
Wow.
Right. So those are the things that I find myself obsessing over more than just the kind of like net worth,
absolutely.
Like valuation, right, stuff like that.
Again, that takes a massive amount of inflection or inspect, that's the proper word, you know, inner thought, right? That for you to be able to understand. And I'm not sure if that took time. And I really want to understand, while this metamorphosis is happening within you, you had a big ass bill to pay because you had a ship that you had to overcome. Before we take our first break, I want to understand, because this is the most epic story I've heard. And this is, again, the pivotal moment of how my mindset shifted from, hey, I need to raise funds all the time because that's the only way you can sustain your startup.
Mm.
But here you are, I'm talking to you in between my failed startup and this new one that I'm trying to do. And you did it with a negative eight digits, and you turned it into a profit over time. How did you get that done?
I think there's definitely a lot of trial and error.
Right.
I would say if I were to, like back then, I had no like master plan. I didn't know anything. I was 23, right? I was just going to try everything.
Yeah.
I think if I were to look back, right, and what worked, right, I think the first one is break down the really big problems to the small things you can handle.
Got it.
You know, that was one of the best pieces of advice I got.
you know, from mentors.
Nice. So then look at the 8 digits. How can you dissect the 8 digits? Yeah. Small.
And get it to the point where it's you can do something this hour, you know? So for example, like meeting, I met with creditors a lot, right? You know, I think that helped them reassure them that I wasn't going to run or anything. I was committed to this. I think that was big. I think making sure also you have, like, if I look at this, like any kind of like whatever, you know, modest level of success I have now is, it's really all the other people that I've built connections with.
Okay.
When I say connections, I don't just mean like
connect on LinkedIn or whatever.
I mean like there's really a vested interest in each other's success. Yeah. You know,
like you're rooting for and actively helping someone out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the same for me. I mean, they feel the same for me. I think that's been huge. Then I think there's a lot to be said about persevering.
Yes.
And not being in a hurry. Right. You know? This is a great book, South. By Shackleton, Ernest Shackleton, I think, yeah.
South.
Highly recommend it. Mm-hmm. Where I like reading those older books, or, you know, I don't know if you ever read
Hemingway type of
stuff. Yeah, I love those books, right? Like Sam Harris. It just gives you a different kind of person,
right?
Mm-hmm. Right? Someone who can last years.
Yep.
You know, who can, he's just like on his own journey, doesn't care about, you know, how many likes he gets on social media, or
that's not a metric when they do that stuff, right?
And it kind of like it's very rare now, but it's like this very clear but independent minded person. Like I'm committed to this, whether it's a tragedy, I'm going to see it through. You know, something like that. So I think that really helped that attitude of, I think in a weird way, like my faith really helped me. I say that in a weird way because I wouldn't say I couldn't say, especially back then, I was like exemplary,
right?
You know, in the practice of my faith. Uh-huh. I think a lot of my vices came out from the stress of that period.
It's a phase. Everybody goes through that. I went through a phase too.
I mean, mine is more than a phase. But I think for example, like I remember times reading my Bible while drinking, you know, a lot. Because you're kind of like, but I think that was really, really a good time where on one end, it was really counterintuitive, but another one was also really more, it was very real, right?
Gotcha.
Because you're able to experience things in a new way.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, you feel it sustain you, you know? You see that you get insights.
Absolutely.
And you apply those insights because the stakes are higher.
Absolutely.
So I think that helped.
All right. Now let's take our first break. And when we come back, we will now discuss how he was able to save his father's company all the way to Bridge, TNB Aura, in Archangel. But let's talk about that more after the break.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Hey guys, I have a very, very exciting opportunity I want to share with you guys. If you're a B2B startup founder, listen up. Your ticket to growth is here. Introducing Impact 24, the Philippines' largest B2B SaaS challenge. Calling all startups in their pre-launch, pre-seed, or seed stages, this is your chance to accelerate your growth. Submit your pitch to Impact 24 and get ready for a 10-week intensive program to elevate your solution. What's in it for you? How about up to 500,000 pesos in MVP project support, exclusive credits from industry partners, personalized mentoring, and a shot to pitch at SaaSCon PH, the country's biggest SaaS conference this April. But yo, you gotta hurry up because submissions close on January 26, 2024 already. Don't miss out on this opportunity to take your startup to new heights. Apply now at saaschallenge.ph. That's SaaSChallenge.ph.
impact.ph. And good luck, and I'll see you guys in Impact 24. And we're back in the break. We are still with David Bonifacio, then told us this amazing journey before we started to build the bridge that got us here, technically. So
we're still building it.
Technically. But the bridge is there, right? Because people always say, let's cross the bridge when we get there. The bridge is there, though, right, to get this done. So again, you've helped the company stay afloat. How did that transition into building Bridge? Because again, I'm feeling the crunch now, right? We have a 60-man team in the Philippines and in Indonesia. I think there's some scattered around the region too. But at a certain point in Podcast Network Asia's life, payroll became a big pain in the ass. Not just on how to fund it. That's on me. All right. That's my problem, right? But disbursing payroll and making sure that we're above board, making sure that everything's on point, became a big pain in the ass. And we're a tiny company. Mm. I could just imagine how big of a problem it is for so many companies, especially if you're an emerging startup. Because eventually, that journey of a startup going from zero to one, looking for traction whatnot, you won't notice it. So as you start hiring, you know, you're just trying to fill in gaps or, you know, plugging in holes. You realize like, oh my God, I have a 25-man team. There are HR issues. There are people who feel overworked and all these things that you solve in an HR, but the constant is there. Every 15th and 30th, payroll needs to be done, whether you have money or not. How did you find this problem, first of all? And how did you solve it, considering that there are also competition or incumbents who are probably not doing it as good as you guys are?
So there's a few things, right? Like, okay. I think let's talk about first how I got into it.
All right, let's do it.
So I had the family stuff.
Okay.
Obviously, that business was being fixed and they had to pay the bills.
Yep.
And I moved out early. I moved out like I was 21, you know? So then I needed to earn money.
Okay.
So I was also doing odd jobs on the side, I would teach. You know, like, because I had also sold one of my smaller businesses before. So I did have some savings, right?
Gotcha.
Coming out of it. But there were two companies that I started that were later on acquired by the CBTL Holdings Group.
Paolo Del Rosario.
So Paolo Walden. Yeah. And so that's how I got into the group. Remember, I was working with the group for a long time. Then I became their director for strategy, handling their investments in Newly Ventures. I don't know if you remember New Leaf.
Yes, yes. I remember going to their old office. It's not Piccadilly. But the one at the near SM Aura, that old office.
Oh, Infinity.
Yeah,
yes.
Infinity. And then I remember going to their new office in Menorco.
Yes.
There. So see.
I think they were in the 10th. We were in the...
Right. Near Facebook. I remember that building.
Oh, in Menorco, they were like 20 plus.
Right.
They leveled up there, yeah.
Right.
So New Leaf had, let's say, Payroll Hero. It's one of the investments, right? Elevation Partners, which is the company actually started that they acquired. That was ended up being acquired also later on. But the Payroll Hero investment was what introduced us to payroll.
Gotcha. Now, Judah Hirsch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Steve Jagger. So Judah
Steve
is Solarium.
I apologize, Steve Jagger. Steve, you are my very first sponsor in Hustle Share. How can I this to you?
Oh, wow.
Yes, my bad,
full
Steve
circle,
Jagger.
Full circle, yeah.
Oh, my God. Michael Stevenson.
Michael Stevenson.
Right. My bad. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. And so I think what we saw then was there was room for a partner to these platforms.
Right.
Where it was managed. So managed payroll.
Right.
So we partnered with Payroll Hero, Sprout, of Patrick Gentry,
and Alex.
And they're all awesome people. And I think that's kind of like, I guess, my trademark. And that's why the company's called Bridge.
Gotcha.
Makes a lot of sense. The whole concept is, in a world of or, look for end.
Does that mean?
So a lot of people will think that I should be competitors with Payroll Hero or Sprout. But really, we're partners.
Wow.
So if you look at it, we've built our business. We're probably one of Sprout's biggest users.
Because we
offer a managed Sprout product.
Got it.
So there are some customers that say, I have full HR, I have everything I need to manage it. I'll just get the platform. Right? They go straight.
Right. DIY.
Yeah. And there are some clients in the Philippines, I think there's a lot of them we find, that say, you know what? I don't want to have to think about this. Right. I don't want my team to think about this. I just want you guys to handle everything. And
It's like, you know, it's like buying a car and a car and a driver.
That's why you got Pod Machine right away when I told you about it. Because Pod Machine, yeah. Technically, yes, we have our amazing producers yeah. in-house.
There's a car and a driver.
Right. Yeah. But nobody wants to fucking edit their podcast on their own. Like me, I don't have time for this, right?
In a non-Philippine setting, people think that's nuts.
Correct.
So for example, a lot of people are saying, isn't that like weird that SaaS, isn't that completely against SaaS?
Yeah.
Right? The whole idea of SaaS mm-hmm. is you do it yourself, right?
Like, but people yeah. will pay for convenience. Always.
Especially here.
Right.
Right? And I think where we're our differentiator at the payroll side, which is Payday, Bridge Payday, right. is accurate, secure, on-time payroll, where we like to use these great tools, right? Right. We also have our own Payday cloud, but ultimately the skill of your driver matters.
Of course.
Right. And so the skill of our payroll processor, I think, is what we really build on. Mm-hmm. And that's why our clients are, you know, I think like some of our clients are really long, you know, wow. have been with us for a long time.
Wow. And once you build that dependency, nobody wants to ever come back. Because at the end of the day, from a company standpoint, did I fix a problem? Yes. Is it, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah. It's right? so cheap. It's pretty much cheaper than having your own team. Even exactly. with the processor, right? I think that's the best. And then, so that's how we got into payroll. I mean, HR would be, wow. you know, but then the more I thought about it, the more it aligned with my own personal thing about HR, payroll, and the things you can do to unlock mm-hmm. the life, right? The things you can do to help maximize the payroll.
Right.
And that's where loans came in, you know, at low-cost loans, right? Versus kind of like BNPL or,
right.
like, so for example, we charge an average of like 2% a month.
Wow.
Yeah. An interest for right. payroll loans, which is way cheaper than all of these BNPL
yeah,
or anything.
Yep.
Obviously, we don't have as big an amount in terms of, we're not going to lend someone $1 million.
Of course.
When their salary, you know, it's like, because
that's a bank already.
But I mean, we have lent a person $1 million.
Wow.
But it depends on their salary. Right?
Of course, yeah. of course.
And because our end goal is not to have a loan book. Our end goal is for the borrower to be financially secure.
Correct.
And so it was really interesting pre-pandemic. The amount of interest savings we had saved or would have saved, right? The pandemic happened. It was about 41 million.
And there's a high chance of course, not defaulting because you're probably going to do a salary deduction for that.
Yeah, all salary deduction.
Got it.
I mean, our goal is not to make money off the bad habits of people.
Of course.
I mean, it's sadly a good business model. It's right. sadly a very profitable business right, model, right. right? But we believe that there is a market for people who do need credit.
Of course.
But are actually responsible.
Yes. So a perfect example is my mom, right? He raised me on good credit. She can't afford a lot of the stuff because he put me in good schools.
Yeah.
Gave me good opportunities, and without that, I am a product of the opportunity she gave me. Because the status quo of my family, of course, people are giving her shit for like putting me in a good school and whatnot, because that wasn't what we can afford as a status quo. But she knew that these investments eventually would pay off. She couldn't afford it, so credit was her line. But one thing that's so amazing about my mom was, I don't know how she pulled it off, but she always paid on time. Even if she couldn't afford, I don't know where she got the money, or probably borrowed somewhere to pay another one, but she always paid on time. And those are the types of people you want to support, because eventually they are the ones who would need that extra bridge to cross the street, because they're sending someone to school, they're a breadwinner. And again, that life that you're now providing them, that eventually they'll cross that bridge too.
I like how we should get that. We should use that story. Okay. I'll give you an example. A lot of business owners say, we don't want to give our people access to these loans.
Right.
That company's is actually called Bridge Access.
Wow.
And what we tell them is, we don't want people borrowing. I think the first thing we explain is, your people are borrowing, whether you like it or not. And a lot of it is not, some of it is driven by bad behavior. Okay. Some of it is actually driven by the realities of life, you know? So what is an example of that, right? Like inflation. I mean, our wages don't rise as fast as prices. Right. So what do you do? Or for example, in the case of, let's say, someone who wants to put their child to a better school.
Of course.
Right? Obviously, there's too much, right? Let's say if you're making a certain amount, then you want to put your kid in like IS or Brent.
That's right.
You
know, it's like probably out of your league right there.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's like,
but it's a choice of like, this is the choice before my mom had public school or private school.
Yeah.
And that was a big, big opportunity. I'm not shitting on public school. My wife studied in a public school. She turned out great. But again, meritocracy is a myth.
Yep.
Right? She gave me opportunities where, again, it's probably three notches above her weight class, but she wanted to make sure that I get access to that.
Yeah.
Just for the opportunities.
And so if you think about it, it's like if the credit extended, let's say from the borrower side, is for a purpose that creates more value than it was borrowed, is within the reasonable ability of the person to repay, and is not, which includes low interest rate, then I think that's good credit.
That's right? Amazing.
Now, from the lender side, if the credit was lent, you know, within the person's reasonable ability to pay.
Of course.
Right? Ideally, it's for a good purpose. You can't always control that. And then, of course, if there is a way to collateralize, then I think it's good credit or deduct from the salary, right? So, because I don't think most people don't pay out of like malice.
No.
I think it's because they didn't manage
their hands are tied.
Yeah, or they didn't manage it. So if there is a way to deduct it, right? So I don't think credit is the enemy. I think bad credit is the enemy.
Yeah.
Just like I don't think, like, that's why I tell business owners, for people that have never had to have credit,
right?
They don't understand that sometimes credit is the only way for you
to. Product
if not, you're just
credit.
In this cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because eventually there will be a chasm that you bridge, again, pun intended, eventually, that through that persistence, the income would meet that credit. And then you'll then be clean slate.
If you think about technically an investment,
right,
basically acts like a no collateral credit. You know, it's like an advance, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's just that there's no claims on it after.
Exactly.
If you think about a kid with rich parents, what the parents are paying forward is, again, like an example of a non. It's like it's basically like it acts like credit. It's money that you don't have. Mm-hmm. You just don't have to ever repay it.
Exactly.
So in that case, a lot of us benefit from other people's capital being advanced to us. And so the lower your interest rate is, the closer it becomes to an investment.
Exactly.
Right? The higher your interest rate, the more it becomes.
Digging yourself a grave.
You're serious. Yeah.
Now, I want to understand, David, from, again, you have this massive opportunity and there's a lot of people, millions and millions of people who need this. But again, you ran it like a proper business was supposed to be run. You've had two businesses that got acquired by the CBTL group prior to that. How were you able to create this and scale without having to raise too much money? When I say too much money, where you're always dependent on fundraising the way startups are. Because again, guys, if you're listening to this podcast, I always say it, fundraising is not the end goal.
Yeah.
All right?
Well, we made every mistake in the book.
Okay.
To start,
like what?
Bridge.
Example.
Like we made every mistake. Like I think my first mistake was I gave up way too much shares too early.
Okay.
I think that's I always call that my original sin.
Okay.
I don't necessarily blame anyone but myself. We didn't know any better.
Right.
You know, like we started in 2015. I didn't know any better. And I was just really trying to get the thing off the ground, you know. I think we also raised too little. I think we raised too little.
So you gave up too little. You gave up too much for too little.
Yeah. Which is like one of the dumbest things anyone
but
can do.
But that was persistent in that during that time, 2015 to 2012.
Yeah.
That was the name of the game, Sharky Deals.
And that is very difficult to get out of.
No, you can't.
I think I'm very grateful to my team for kind of like very committed to our word.
Right.
Even if, you know, we basically didn't get as good a deal as the others.
Yeah.
You know.
But you deal with the hand that you're dealt with, technically.
So from then, we had to fix it and say, hey, we can't keep racing because then we're down to like 1%.
Correct.
So,
you know, like,
so we had to find a way.
Yeah.
And we had to change it, right? Into a way where let's just run. Like, we can't promise the crazy valuations from racing and racing. Mm. But it's also something that we can work towards.
Absolutely.
So we had to correct a lot. I guess the bigger lesson here is, and we're still correcting a lot, right? The nice thing is that the pandemic really helped us, like just blow through all the corrections.
Absolutely.
But I think the nice lesson here is, I think for new founders, is to avoid those mistakes.
Yep.
But I think the other side is that things are correctable.
Correct.
I think that's the other nice lesson where, you know, you can correct your mistakes.
But you can only do that if you have traction. Okay. That's the only...
There are certain mistakes that you're just better off starting fresh somewhere else.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. That's what happened in Party File. I also got fleeced in my cap table.
Yeah.
We didn't have enough traction to back it up, so I'm going to have to do it. And then eventually it died.
Yeah.
Right? But I had to do a clean slate. Chatbot PH was good. Got acquired.
Yep.
Yay.
And I don't think... I think in the Philippines in particular, we have the wrong idea of like failure. Yeah. So I think a lot of people just try to avoid it altogether. Mm. Never want to acknowledge it, call it. I think one of my superpowers is I've made so many mistakes that I find them so funny that I kind of like can learn from it and not doesn't impact my sleep or anything like that. It's like we have, but it's just your ability to learn from your mistakes because you're willing to call them as mistakes.
Correct.
Is very important. And so we're lucky that we could correct some of those mistakes, right? But yeah, no, I mean, there are some things I've tried that were just like, you know what, this is a loss. Yeah.
Were there any near-death experiences?
Yeah, absolutely.
How close were you and how did you get out of that?
Very close. Very close many times. Like the pandemic, the first time it happened, right? Our AR was through the roof. You know, a large AR for a startup is nuts.
Yep.
Right? You're talking about, let's say like, I think like in the 30 million. It's big. Yeah.
And you can't blame them because shit flows downwards, right?
Can't blame them, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's between 20 and 30. I don't remember anymore. But I think that was one. I think early on, we've had a few also. Like, there were many things that we did in a rush.
Mm.
You know, like, oh, what? Because you're just thinking about the next thing to do to grow.
Okay.
You know, it's been a lot. I mean, there's definitely been more than one near death. You know, another one recently was, you know, since we're doing loans, right? We're working on wholesale loans. And so some of the best sources for wholesale funding for loans are international because they have low cost. They have low interest.
Correct.
Right? Now, because we hadn't signed on it, then the dollar went up.
Ooh,
so that would have been bad. So, imagine if you had like a $5 million loan and goes up by 20%.
Oh,
right?
My God. Yeah.
So that would have been bad. So we're very fortunate, you know, that... And I think that's where I have to give credit to the directors, right? To the board for one is sticking with us.
Correct.
You know, we're overdue for an exit.
Yeah.
You know, like the company survived, it's growing, but we're definitely overdue for an exit. But I mean, they've been very, very
supportive and
I think they're also very realistic.
That's good.
You know, the pandemic changed a lot of the plans.
Right.
You know, so, and I think it also helps that they know that I have a lot of skin in the game.
Absolutely. Right.
It's not like I'm playing with
you. Because the buck stops with you at the end of the day, right? So they're your board. Again, just for red context for those people who are listening, right? This is why it's important to let the right people in your company. It's not about the money. It's the right people because it's so easy to say, hey, I'm excited about your business. Let me invest, blah, blah, blah. But when shit hits the fan, that's when you know who you really
are. We definitely made that mistake.
Right? No, but there are.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, if there are far more that where so many, so much more root for you and are helping.
Yeah.
To not just watch in the sidelines and watch you suffer, but are willing to give you a hand. The buck stops with you and you're going to be able to find a way to get you out of that rut. But that extra hand of like, all right, let me help you out. Let me give you a favor. That can be life or death for any startup. That happened to us in P&A so many times last year in 2020 and during the pandemic. But there's always the right investor that are always going to be, again, an angel to get us up.
I think that's what attracted me to DNB Aura when they reached out, right? I mean, we met them through another transaction.
Right.
But I think when I think about the differentiator of DNB Aura, I think one is the governance.
Yes.
You know, I really wish I paid more attention to that early on, that I wouldn't have had to correct so much.
Correct.
But I'm really glad that, like for me, that's probably the theme of this year.
Right.
At least from an execution side. Which I think I've appreciated. And I think the other side is low volume deals because they do very few deals a year.
Right.
They get to really...
Nitpick.
Yeah, they don't kind of like message blast everyone and say, oh, we supported everyone. Yeah. Saying they're like... They can... The GPs call you. You know? Yeah. So I think... And the venture partners, right? Everyone is... Because if you're only talking about, let's say, like 20 deals a year...
Mm.
It's not hard, right? It's not hard to really build a relationship with these people.
Absolutely,
yeah. So I think connecting that to, you know, I've been asked by other funds to be a venture partner, country partner, and I really appreciated a group that had heavy governance and really long-term relationships. Mm. I mean, the capital is, everyone has capital already at this point. I mean, in terms of funds, right? They won't be a fund if they don't have the capital. But I think that was our major differentiator. Because when you look at what ends up killing a company down the road, is when you're growing really fast, right?
Yep.
You really create entropy.
Absolutely.
Right? And it's not necessarily wrong. It's part of the process, right? Mm. So you have to be able to create your issues in a way where it's manageable, or you can correct it down the road, versus you create issues that,
and you go terminal.
It's a time bomb.
After that.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, it's like, yeah.
Absolutely. And again, we just to provide context on how something will provide entropy or over fatigue, right? Mm-hmm. When we grew a little bit too fast in Podcast Network Asia, we went from 5 shows to 230 shows in the span of 2 years.
Wow.
So our production team felt that. And the system that we had at show 230 was pretty much the same system we had at five shows.
Wow.
So that wasn't going to scale. So we had to reinvent the wheel last year, dissect this whole thing so that people don't feel overworked. It's never our intention to overwork people. What the hell? Who thinks that anyway, right?
Yeah,
I don't care how devilish you are, but nobody thinks like, yeah, let's overwork people today, right? No. But we had to really dig down deep and figure out if we're ever going to scale, we had to pump the brakes. Hmm. We cannot continue with the same pace because what's it going to cost us is this amazing team.
Yeah.
We lost a good chunk of our team, and that's one thing that we learned. But again, because there was this, it wasn't entropy, it was more, we used the muscle too much and we strained it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And with any type of injury, you need to step back and give it a rest so that you can build muscle again and resistance. And at that point, we had to reinvent the wheel, change the way we edit, change the way we produce, and then Pod Machine came out.
Mm.
And now we're better than ever.
Mm.
Right? But in hindsight, and then you only know this after it happens.
Yeah.
I wish I would have done it sooner. I wish I would have done the HR shit sooner.
Yeah.
I wish I would have done these things. But you don't know because you're
running. Don't know what you don't know.
You're 100 miles per hour, right? And you're just trying to win.
Yep.
And win and at the same time fucking survive.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, fuck. It's so hard. But again, everybody goes through this. The most important thing is you are able to correct it.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, that's why, people say everyone should be an entrepreneur. I think that's like a really bad piece of advice.
it's like, oh, are you ready for this shit? No.
You know, there's sports and there's extreme sports, right? Extreme sports,
this is
you can die. Yeah, you can die, right? Like, I think, I also think that, that's why I think deep down inside, I'm more a PE guy than a VC guy.
Mm.
You know?
So for those people, PE is not physical education, huh?
Yeah.
It's private equity versus
so
venture capital.
I prefer, you know, something that's
built now, ready for scale.
Yeah, versus, let's say, like 0 to 1, right? Like, not maybe, I mean, I love 0 to 1 stuff.
Yeah.
But I maybe not be that skilled in it. You know what I'm saying? Like, think I'm more like, you're already 1, I can take 1,000.
Exactly.
You know, like that.
And again, I've learned this in shout out Insignia Ventures Academy.
They
let me participate last year in one of their cohorts. And I realized that, okay, VC is really, you're betting on a founder at a super high risk, high reward era for a 100x return.
Yeah.
9 out of your 10 investments are going to be fucked.
Yeah.
Right? But that one can hopefully, not everybody gets it, will offset all your losses. In PE, it's 2 to 3x return, but there is now a bigger, a stable and less risky thing because the company has now figured out how to be profitable and all they need money for is to scale.
Yeah.
There. All right, now let's take our last break. And when we come back, let's now talk about the ND Aura and how you then wear that hat along with paying it forward to the rest of the startup ecosystem. But let's talk about that more after the break. Hey Hustlers, it's time to talk business once again, and we're excited to share a bit more info about our sponsor, Sprout Solutions. And again, just like what I said at the start of the episode, you should check out Sprout's Payroll Starter
as you grow your own startup. Because this bundle that they have is literally what you need to take your startup to the next level as you grow your employees. And this bundle is your key to freedom, including payroll outsourcing to experts, a subscription to timekeeping and attendance software, and government compliance services. Sprout's Payroll Starter has you covered for payroll, BIR, SSS, and taxes, all the stuff that no founder loves to do. So let Sprout handle the busy work and say goodbye to lines and tax payment stress. All this for as low as 5,000 pesos. Again, that's just 5,000 pesos all in for your payroll and HR needs. So visit sprout.ph payroll-starter-monthly-5k or again, just click the link in the description box of this episode to elevate your business management game. And again, big thank you to Sprout Solutions, liberating your time for what truly matters. Hey hustlers, I hope you're having a great 2024 so far. As you know, a lot of startups had a very challenging 2023, and hopefully things are going to do better this year for a lot of us. Not just because it's the year of the dragon, but also because our sponsor, Dragon Pay, is here to help your startups process payments in the most efficient way. Established in 2010, Dragon Pay empowers businesses of all sizes to accept and disperse payments through secure and convenient channels, giving your customers the flexibility to choose the payment method that suits them best. With over 85 partner channels, 35,000 partner branches nationwide, including QRPH, e-wallets, crypto, buy now, pay later, and many more. They also process an astonishing 15 million transactions processed globally each month. Dragon Pay is your trusted choice for online payments. And here's something to show you how legit Dragon Pay is. Dragon Pay was named FinTech of the Year at last year's Philippine FinTech Festival in 2023. So let's make 2024 extra prosperous for you and your startup in this year of the dragon. For more details, head on over to dragonpay.ph. That's dragonpay.ph. Trust the pioneer. Trust Dragon Pay. And we're back in the break. We are still with David Bonifacio, always made piok. I'm super excited to finally be able to record in person again after a couple of years of not being able to do it. And again, brand new Podcast Network Asia Studios that you can rent, by the way, if you can check it out.
That's a nice place.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And again, for those investors who trusted us, this is where your money went. Physical store. No, during the tail end of the pandemic, there's more and more need to get people to really record. And it's way different. I love doing it on Zoom, but feeding off of your energy and having that, you know.
Yeah, no, it's different.
It's totally different. And you can probably notice this in the way. Oh, we also sound is more consistent because we're using the same mic setup. World class on Podcast Network Asia Studios. Sorry, just plugging. But again, we'll now talk about TNB Aura. So venture partner, you're doing Bridge at the same time. But on the other side, you wear another hat, right? You are now part of a VC firm as a venture partner. Just being naive and for those people who are like, what the hell is a venture partner? Can you describe first what the role is and why did you choose TNB Aura again over the other funds who are trying to get access to this?
First and foremost is when I'm thinking about the TNB side, right? Like so a venture partner is basically, you can look at it like buy side, sell side, right? So there's a part where, you know, you're helping fundraise, right? Particularly locally.
Right.
I think the more of the work though, since the fund is closed, right? Is looking for deals. So we look for Series A deals. But then now that we have a scout fund, we're willing to back scout deals. So the scout deals are about 250K a check.
Okay.
The Series A deals are like $1 million, you know.
Right.
And up.
So scout deals is anything before A? Or yeah. How is there a range where like at seed?
You know, like right now we're defining it. But ideally the scout deals can become an A deal.
Got it.
Which I think is great because then you know that you have someone with $1 million check waiting to follow
to
on.
To double down.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's why we put in just as much effort into the scout deals.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to...
It's like pre-game already, technically.
Yeah. So right. I think what I've appreciated about TNBR is really the discipline.
Okay.
And so there's a methodology, which means that we miss a lot of deals. Particularly, we miss a lot of deals. We also miss some good deals. You know, that's part of it. But that's also why we have a positive record.
Got it.
You know, in terms of IRR.
this is our second fund. Mm-hmm. So I think the discipline to stick to your strategy, you know, miss some deals, get some deals, be okay with it, not to be FOMO, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's a really important thing. Mm-hmm. I just find that FOMO drives a lot of the deals here.
Absolutely.
You know?
Anywhere.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Anywhere. Right. And I think, and I do think that that is part of the business.
Yeah.
You know, your ability to, I mean, you've seen people who are successful at driving it yeah. succeed in a sense. Yeah. I just don't know. Like, I personally am not good at that. Mm. So I like being part of something where that doesn't require me to be good at that.
Got it. No, but all right. If you're really very particular in the type of startups, can you just describe first what type of startups you like investing on? Because of course, a lot of people didn't make the cut or you didn't pull the trigger.
Yeah.
So David, what are the type of the common denominators across the startups that you guys like to invest in here in the Philippines?
Yeah, you know, in the Philippines, we actually liked a lot.
Okay.
Very interested in a lot. Our methodology, like one of them, is we call it the China Unicorn methodology, where...
China Unicorn.
Yeah, okay. I think, I don't know if we showed it to you, we mapped out, you know, different startups in China that became unicorn and then mapped out the, you know, the factors that we believe led to it.
Okay.
And then we look at different companies that have that precedence in, let's say, Indonesia, Vietnam, and we score them against that, right? So,
got it.
So I think the Philippines has a lot of interesting deals, for sure.
Fintech,
I mean, that's
crypto.
Why we're here, right? It wasn't, I mean, it's the newest of the markets, right? Yep. We're in Vietnam.
And finally, we're on the radar because this was a dead area.
It took a long time, right? And I think a lot of the issues have been really structural. Mm. Okay, so one would be cap table.
Yep.
another one would be
you know this because you've seen a bad cap table in yourself.
I mean I feel like local investors need to help the next batch of startups you know, like, have a better cap table and I think this happens when you're trying to cash in too quickly or you're trying to reassure yourself too quickly you know, it's like you feel like the more control you have the more the business can do better, which is really very
you're
different
handicapping
from how,
that business.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think that's a major issue. I think another one would be structural in the form of, like, if a company's registered here, you know, then you have capital gains. You have this hurdle rate from day one.
So another handicap.
It's definitely, and it's not an easy handicap.
Nope.
Because it's like you have, that's a government, you know, like, so that's why sometimes they'll have these startup bills. A part of it is in investment. I don't think the government investing is the key because there's a lot of money that's interested to invest anyway. Mm. I think that the challenge is really your tax structure, you know?
And I don't think they're going to change it, unfortunately, here.
Yeah, doubt it. Yeah. So, and it's out of my control, right? So we have to play within the boundaries, right?
Correct.
But having said that, when we do our math and we discount with... You know, do you put $1 million in company A in the Philippines or company A in Vietnam, right? Or Singapore. Unless it's super duper amazing.
Then you're going to have to pick the right one.
Now, some funds, they will do it, right? Just to be able to say we're everywhere.
Yeah.
Right? And TNBR, like I mentioned, the discipline is very... So I think that's one. I think we're also very cautious about FOMO valuations.
FOMO valuation.
You know, like, and it's not to say that those companies don't deserve their valuations. I think your valuation is the valuation you raise. That's your valuation, right?
Correct.
Like, no matter what anyone
whoever
says.
Bit at that valuation.
But it may not fit our risk, our risk model, our pricing model.
Got it.
Right? So I think the discipline to be able to say no to something because it doesn't fit your model, even if it's potentially a good one, right? Mm. Like, so for example, I remember my mother said, like, should I invest in Tesla?
Okay.
Right. She had shares in ARK Invest.
Okay.
Right? ARK Invest, something. And so it's like, do you think this is a good investment?
Okay.
Right. I said, the first thing you need to ask is, what are your investment goals?
Okay.
Right. Because based on that, what's your horizon?
Ah.
Right. So let's just say for someone who needs the money my mom's in her 60s. Right?
Yeah.
I think. But I think she's in her 60s, right? So it's like, you're going to want to retire soon, right? You don't want things that are, or locked up or could crash in the short term like that. Mm. Or another one, I remember my mom was attending the fact that she's into finance is interesting, right? But my mom was like looking at like investing in stocks. Mm. My mom's a painter. So I was telling her, okay, let's say you wanted to make $1 million a year, right? In clean inflow, right? Mm-hmm. if you wanted to make that from investing, let's say you're a decent investor and you could make 10% a year. That's not easy, investing in stocks, making 10%. No. Especially nowadays, right? You would need 10 million pesos in your account at 10% to make a million.
Yep.
But as a painter, if you sell, let's say, 4 paintings at 250,000 pesos, then you make a million doing the thing you love, doing the thing you're good at. And so I think like you have to really start with those outcomes and then you work backwards. So just going back to the question, right? Like a lot of the companies that we like because of the way they're structured won't help us achieve the outcomes that we're targeting. Yeah. But market, it's like, like we're really hoping to help these companies unlock the market, right? Like potential of that. But until these structural things are fixed, I think we'll see more scout deals than big deals.
Gotcha.
At least from us.
But eventually, I mean, again, just give it time. Eventually, a lot of those will.
And there are bigger funds that are making those bets.
Correct.
You can see it.
But you're already in the cap tables, at least. You get your.
Ideally, And I think we will make bigger bets this year.
There you
That's for sure. Yeah.
So if you're a startup,
we're looking. Yeah.
There you go.
Like you, it will come out soon. Mm-hmm. But you're going to find a lot of Philippine targeting startups registered in Singapore.
Of course.
Right.
Now, we're one of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's smart, actually. It's just as a Filipino, I wish we could capture more of that here. But if your government doesn't structure you in such a way to do that, then.
I mean, we still have
you provide jobs here. You know, you do things like that. Yeah.
But the holdco will always be in SG. Or somewhere else, if you like.
Yeah, IRA. Delaware. Or
if you like the RA. That's worse.
Dublin.
Or wherever, if you're Seychelles, whatever.
Yeah.
If you're in crypto. But, okay, this is going a couple steps back. As a venture partner, what's your day-to-day like? Because, again, you still have Bridge to run. And I'm
I think because we have a methodology and we have a team.
Okay.
We're able to narrow down who to meet. Mm. You know, I think that's a big help, right? Like, it's not like throw a party, meet everyone, and grab drinks with everyone or coffee with everyone.
Yeah. I think it's that's not one. Shotgun, spray and pray.
So I think that helps a lot. Mm-hmm. And then when we do have the meeting, our questions are prepared, you know?
Got it.
And so then of course we leave room for, you know, things that they may say that we didn't. Because most of these businesses, we don't know what we don't know. Right. Yeah. We look a lot at precedents, right? So I think so I wouldn't say it takes up like it's a non operating role. Okay. You know? So I think that's a good one. Yeah.
Right. No, but again, it's deal flow and deal sourcing, it's a full time job. I tried playing around with it again with Insignia Ventures Academy and my God, this is just like sales. Right.
Well,
and
that's where your good team helps.
Right.
Yeah. So,
and again, network. At the end of the day, you have to have that back channel really buzzing because, of course, there's FOMO. But if you have a methodology, then you're easily going to be able to sift out the winners from the not yets.
Yeah.
Right. It's because they're just not investable. Maybe it's just not the right time. Right. It's never a never. It's rarely a never. Actually, majority of them. Are not yet. Now I have a few questions, David, because it was such an amazing thing. Last thing I want to dabble on. There's the Archangel or Archangel. I don't know what the proper pronunciation.
Yeah, Archangel. Yeah.
Archangel. What with that? How aligned is that with how you guys source out things in TNB Aura as well? And what are the types of businesses you like to support there? And I guess structure. What's that like too?
You know, I think this is one of the more kind of like. I think right now it's counterintuitive, but I think you're going to find more and more people are going to be like this, right? Where different people will be part of different platforms because those platforms have very clear mandates, right? So if you think about like TNBR, Series A, VC, you know, like very clear mandates, very clear methodology, it allows different people from other platforms to connect, right? And contribute to the mandate of that platform. You see this in social networks. You see this in the old model is kind of like you get hired by a company. The company owns you.
Yeah.
You know, if you aren't seen working, you're not working. I think more and more, the most productive people you'll find are going to be, in a sense, multi-platform.
Yeah.
You know, but those platforms are going to be very clear about their mandate and going to be very clear about how they operate so that they don't conflict.
Yeah. Okay, with Archangel, what's the mandate per se?
So the mandate is, so I guess the simplest way to say is faith-driven impact investing.
Gotcha.
You know, Philippines focus.
Okay.
Not necessarily venture, not necessarily like VC.
Okay.
And part of it is because some of these impact investments need to be more patient.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? Yeah. And I think it also, it's like on one end, you need to be patient. Another end, you don't really want them blitzscaling. You know,
yes.
I mean, if they're able to, why not, right? But I think the reason is because not everyone can handle bit scaling.
Nope.
Let's say like mentally or spiritually, you know, or something like that. So I think instead of putting up a charity, so I think a lot of people want to have a career, they want to have jobs, they want to have investments, they want to have community impact either through a charity. And so the more you empower people to do that, the better I think it is for your so as an entrepreneur, right? I see my role as helping create the organizations that help people do that, right? That's why there have been multinationals that have, you know, I remember I had a meeting with a headhunter, and the headhunter said, "Wow, this is an amazing call," but they would never like you. You would never like them, you know,
right?
Because you're meant to birth these organizations that allow people to connect it. So, I think that's where Archangel allows people of similar faith, for me at least, to help us put our money where our faith is. Because a lot of, I mean, the Christian, like calling yourself a Christian or all these things, it could be many different things to many different people.
Yeah.
Right. But I think at some point, it's not simply whether you're a good, like well behaved or misbehaved. I don't think that's the line really.
Mm-hmm.
I think at the end of the day, it really speaks to what do you value,
you know,
and where do you pour your resources into it. So I think that's important.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so all these different platforms, and there's other platforms that I'm involved in, right? Like it's about being able to contribute value to those platforms. And the important thing is that the value is seen.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times where, you know, you try it, doesn't work out, then you just switch. It's not the worst thing in the world. It's not like...
Right.
And usually it's not because you can't contribute or because there's no value in that platform. It's usually because it's not as clear. You know, what your contribution is or how you can contribute or so I think but that's why I'm very excited about this whole HR space, because I think the more companies empower people to be multi-platform, the more people will not want to leave or
that's
not
a network to. Effect too. Absolutely. And again, it's if your mindset early on was to really see the value through people, then this doesn't get you as close as anything else. I guess probably healthcare is going to be the next one.
I mean, you think about it, right? Like, it's not rare to find a CEO angry at their employee for being involved in too many things.
Yep.
Only for you to find out that they're more involved in more things. Right? So it's like, obviously, there is an importance for focus and all of that. But what the important thing is that you identify what is the outcome that you're supposed to deliver on it, right? And if you can help people deliver on their outcomes without shackling them to one job, one role, one company, or one, then you end up, freeing them. Now, this is a double-edged sword because for people who say, oh, I love that, but they don't have measurable, tangible results, they're better off focusing on one, right? Because then they're just spread thin and all that.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah. Exactly.
So I think it's a double-edged sword, but I think for people who can handle it, then they become force multipliers, right? Versus like you're caging in someone who's super talented simply because you can't handle an employee like that.
Yeah. Got it. All right. Now, let me just ask you a couple more pay it forward questions, because again, you're one of the select few that can actually, that have lived through this and have come out alive very well. And again, you've always been given, giving solid advice, and I'm a recipient of that. But I want to understand from, again, let's go back to how we did a deep dive in the segment before this. There were a lot of near-death experiences, very stressful things, and you've been doing Bridge since 2015.
Yeah.
Right? That's 7 years. That's an eternity in tech.
Too long in tech, yeah.
Right? That's an eternity. I want to understand when the buck stops with you and the toll is just you, and we bring shit to our bed, to our bedroom, and the last thoughts in your head technically can be, again, can make or break you. How do you cope with that imbalance? Because a lot of the startup founders that listen to this are probably well in their first year, second year, and knowing what you know now, how would you advise them to cope with it the way you cope with it for the past 7 years?
I think the key word is knowing what you know now. I wouldn't say I coped with it very well.
Okay. How bad did it get?
I think I did okay. You know, I survived, like you said. I think that's a good word. But I wouldn't say like my relationships were great then, you know, like pre my wife, my relationships were very short.
Right.
Yeah. You know? I think the best thing is that you can learn. Now, I think, you know, if I have to kind of synthesize a lot of the thoughts, right? Like,
right.
Really, our unhappiness is that gap between our expectations and reality.
Yes.
Right. I wish I knew that sooner. And I wish I accepted it sooner. Right. Where there could be a way to lower that, to kind of like lower that gap. So I'll give you an example, right? Sometimes we're not just in a rush to build our business. We're in a rush to enjoy the benefits of a big business.
Yes.
And that's two different things.
Cash out right away.
Right? Or for example, it's like, I want a certain salary right away. Or I want a certain, like, and I realize that, you know, you live a certain way too quickly, right? And then it creates that stress, right? Because not that it's wrong to want something more, right? I think it's just that because it's a rush, right? You know, when I look back, if there were a few things that I would have done sooner, I think the first one is really, and I'm glad I got this one at least relatively early, which is really choose your own score, you know? And what that means is sometimes valuation is the only score that and it becomes misleading.
Correct.
In the startup world, it's really about being clear about the North Star metric.
Of course.
I wish I was clearer about my own life's North Star metric, you know, and then optimize towards that.
Correct.
And if I wasn't sure, I think what I would tell people is like, that's why it's really important to be teachable, to explore, to experiment. Saying that, you know what, I may not have everything figured out, but someday I'm going to find that North Star metric. Now, part of that means that other people don't have to agree with you.
Of course.
Right?
And it's your North Star metric. It's your personal one.
Yeah.
So.
And you have to, I think one thing I did do, right, is I guarded against being bitter when I was rejected. You know, it's like, oh, your idea sucks or your business sucks. Correct. Right? Like,
Somebody doesn't want to invest in you.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
And I think your ability to absorb rejection, which is actually infinite.
We take L's for a living. Yeah. Come on. Yeah. Start up.
But when you realize, hey, you know what? It's not the end of the world. I'm not dead. I'm still eating. You know, it's like, it's an ego. So I think the ability to be like, okay, next person, right? Next fundraise. I think that's huge, right? I think the other one is, like I mentioned earlier, like build connections, like long-term, strong long-term connections.
Friendships.
Yeah, not just network. You know, like I think if people like working with you, right? Not just kind of like because they trust you, because they see the value you bring, I think that's huge.
Absolutely.
I think create value, you know, create and capture value for all your stakeholders. I think I should have been clear about that. I would have been way more deliberate. So now I have like a map of my life.
Nice.
And what becomes the key relationships based on these businesses, based on these, that they...
And this is like something in, like you've documented it.
Yeah,
vividly.
Yeah. It's on my... So for example, like I have many friends, but I have few people that I, like for example, my wife, my son, like my parents, you know, her, like my business partners that I say, like, these are the people that I'm committed to.
Nice.
You know, that I need to find a way to deliver value. And if I can't, you know, then I look for ways, right?
Absolutely.
I think the last one would probably be, and this one, this is part of kind of like my New Year's reflections, right? Is to try to live life magnanimously.
Right.
You know, like, I don't know if you're into like Stoic philosophy, right? But basically the idea of being able to live above circumstances and live according to principle, to be gracious when the times are not gracious, to be generous when things are tight, to be calm when things are like, you know, stormy or chaotic. I think it's important to be able to know that no matter what's happening in the business, you know, you can always step back, right? And you don't have it's not the end of the world if the business fails, or it's not the end of the world. It's hard. I'm telling you, it's really
hard.
I mean, like everyone's been into that, like, how am I going to make payroll tomorrow situation, and it's just super stressful, right?
Yeah. But again, it's just like being in crunch time in basketball, right? You only get better at it through repetition.
And there's no greatness without it. But I think the single biggest thing really is having great partners. Like during the pandemic, right? I spoke to the leaders, you know, like Sharon, Eric, Jana, of Bridge, right? And we said like, we won't take salaries until we fix this, right? So I think for nearly 10 months, we didn't get salaries.
Wow.
Yeah. And so when I say great partners, I think the first thing is the willingness of them to stay committed without that. But also then you realize because they had saved also, there's a certain quality to them where they were in a position to do it because they had saved. Mm-hmm. And in other words, it's like, you know, like high quality partners really helps during tough times.
Yeah.
But I think the best part is now the team can see that, you know, these leaders didn't take pay for you literally to save your jobs.
Exactly.
You know, and I think it's very opposite of what you see usually.
No.
And I think it's a good foundation for the future. So I think that would be the, like, surround yourself with really high quality people.
Right.
You know, not necessarily fancy or,
or people you can count on when shit hits the fan.
I don't know. I probably don't know a single Forbes in the 31st. But I mean, like, but I'm just saying, like, nothing against them, right? I'm just saying, it's like, I think some of these people you already have in your life that may not seem very impressive or anything, but as you can say, you can count on them. Yeah.
Right. And again, just, I totally agree. I'm only enjoying the fruits of that now because for the first two startups that I've had, I'm a solo founder, technically. I've had some part-time co-founders, but it's different when somebody's there. Yeah. Clocking in and you're hand in hand and you've
got the pandemic, I think, showed a lot of people.
Right. And again, just wanted to show my gratitude to my co-founder, Joseph. Tony Joseph, who is the...
You think about someone like Joseph, right? Like he's very capable. He has many options in life.
Right. But he decided to stick it out on months that were short.
Yep.
Dude, sorry about your bills. Sorry about my bills. But we need to pay the guys. They will get fed. But this is something that I super, super, super am grateful now because it's a ride or die type of relationship that we go down with the ship if shit hits the fan.
Yeah, yeah.
We've saved the company so many times last year when we were really darn close from dying, right?
It's what legends are made of, right?
You have Joseph, you're a chubby legend. There you go.
You know, we did our like marriage engagement seminar together.
Yeah.
But which I didn't finish though. I need to go back.
Oh man! All right. So again, Joseph, you are my wife in DNA. Sorry, you're the girl. Just kidding. But yeah, again, super. Thank you so much, David, for such an amazing, amazing episode. But before I let you go, if people want to work with you on two things, again, at TNBRF, they want to pitch you. And also, if they want to try out the best payroll solution in the land, where do they go and how do they do that?
The easiest is to email me, David@BridgeSoutheast.
Bridge Southeast, one word.
Mm-hmm. LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. It's also another one. I don't check it as much though. Look for David Bonifacio. I mean, I'm going to check it a lot. That's one of my New Year's resolutions, right? Like,
or hang out in BGC. Find him near the Shangri-La area. He's always
or even Instagram. Yeah, David Bonifacio.
There you go.
Or Twitter. I think anything David Bonifacio on the social media.
Right.
I rarely use Facebook though.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right.
So you'll be surprised. And Facebook is probably like 30 David Bonifacio. It's a lot.
But again, if you want to reach out, there's a lot of things, super interesting conversation. But again, thank you very much, David. But before I let you go, follow us on whatever podcast app you're listening to, whether Apple Podcasts, Spotify. And if you see any 5 stars, hit us with a 5-star so that we can, you know, get feedback over if you like our episodes or not. If we did say some jargon, it's going to be in the show notes on HustleShare.com. And lastly, we have a brand spanking new community called Hustle Share Premium. So please do check it out because now we're going to be giving you access to the best episodes, playlists, and a whole lot more. So check it out on HustleShare.com. All right. And thank you so much again, David.
Hey, thanks. It was fun. Yeah.
All right. And I'll see you guys in the next episode. Peace. We'll be right back.
The views and opinions expressed by the podcast creators, hosts, and guests do not necessarily reflect the official policy and position of Podcast Network Asia, the hosts of the program, or other programs of the network. Any content provided by the people on the podcast are of their own opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything.